You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Hello, and welcome back to the Massive Report podcast, or the new and improved Massive Report quarantine coronavirus version of the podcast, as we've done the last few weeks here. You're here today with Patrick Murphy. I'm going to kind of lead this thing, but we've got Patrick Goldan on, who we ran through the ringer a couple weeks ago, asking him a series of questions about how he became a crew fan, how he got involved in Mass Report, all sorts of stuff. And we had some good stories out of that. And Sam Fahmy's here as normal, kind of running things behind the scene. But the reason we brought Patrick back in here is not to grill him on his experiences with the crew, but because we have one Chris LaMacchia, who is joining us today. And given Chris and Patrick go back a little bit, I figured it would make sense. So we've started off just, How has this stuff affected you in your day to day life? And once we get through that, we'll get into soccer and stop talking about the coronavirus. But
yeah,
it's interesting to hear how people have been affected by this in various ways.
So really, funny story. I've been working from home for like the past 2 years, yeah. And then I moved into a new role on March 1st at work, but I had to go back to the office on March 1st. So I spent a month in the office and then got the, or not even a whole month, like 3 weeks in the office, and then got the go work from home, message again. Yeah. So, I'm still working. My wife is also working, which is why I'm in the office. I gave her the fancy home office upstairs. So she has an actual space to work out of. And I moved my work setup to the beginnings. It's the beginnings of a man cave. As you can see behind me, I've got the crew stuff. But right now I'm just sitting at our spare dining room table in a 40-year-old wooden chair. Other than the fact that I can't go anywhere and I miss Mexican food like crazy, because Mexican delivery is just not the same. And I'm working from the basement instead of, an actual somewhat office. It's really, I knock on wood, I'm one of the privileged that hasn't been super hard impacted by all this.
Well, that's good to hear. I think the people that can work from home and even people that didn't think maybe, or companies that didn't think that they would be able to work from home, maybe that'll be one of the positives to come out of this is, hey, we realize this might work, you being able to do that or doing it a few days a week or whatnot.
And at the danger of, belaboring this point, the trickle-down effects of this huge amount of the white-collar workforce working from home is going to be massive. It'll be good for the environment. It'll be good for, oil consumption and all of that stuff. It'll be good for traffic. It'll be good for our cars because we're driving less. Just the positive. It's good for our employers because we're more productive because we don't have to sit in traffic for 2 hours each way every day and blah, blah, blah. I really do hope that's one of the positives that comes out of all of this tragedy.
I certainly could see that happening, but let's get to soccer.
Anyway,
people have to deal with coronavirus thoughts all the time. Let's talk about soccer and kind of your history. First, before we even get into crew stuff, what attracted you to soccer? Why, how did you first get involved with the game, fall in love with the game, however it happened for you?
Yeah. So I'm just of that generation that, we played soccer as kids growing up. You played soccer, you played Little League Baseball. If you were built the right way, you played flag football. It was just one of those things that you did. I, until a certain point, played all of the sports that I could play. And then I realized I had sized out of football, as in got too tall, but not wide enough.
Chris is a tall person. If for some reason you've not met him,
if you have never met me, and wherever you're ever at a crew event, look for the tall blonde. Look for me, but tall. And yeah, there you go. It's weird to be seen. I don't normally do, whatever. Anyway, I played soccer growing up, like we all did, and then got to middle school, played middle school soccer, played high school soccer. And then, I'm not going to lie, I'm not a superstar. I was a goalie because I was good at catching things. And my coach was like, all right, there you go. That's what you are. And I didn't play club soccer. I wasn't that superstar soccer player. I was just a kid that had spare time and liked to play sports. So I didn't go on to college, but I kept playing in rec leagues and stuff up until I think I was 31 or 32 when I was playing in a rec league game out at Soccer First in Dublin. And guy took a shot from like 2 yards outside the box, and I dove to my right. And as I pushed off with my foot, I felt my knee snap. And as my fingers were smacking the ball away, I said to myself, I'm never playing this sport again. Just, you know, I've torn my ACL before. I tore it my junior year of high school playing soccer. You know that feeling. It's done. Nope, done. Got up, finished the game because I'm stupid.
Frankie Haddock style.
Say what?
Frankie Haddock style.
Yeah, exactly. Then after the game, swung through the Soccer First concession stand, chugged a couple of beers, and had my girlfriend drive me home, and that was that. But I still love the sport. I really enjoy it. I'm no good at it anymore. I couldn't play today to save my life. But yeah, it's one of those things that you caught the bug and it's stuck.
So from, I assume because you played it as much as you did, when there was the opportunity to watch pro soccer in Columbus, you jumped on that?
Yeah, so I grew up in Columbus, but then due to some family circumstances, moved away in the mid-90s.
Okay.
Moved to a small town in central Kentucky that is well-known, but not to anybody watching this podcast. And went to high school there, but still watched as much soccer on TV as we could. You know, back in those days, soccer was on PBS. You know, it was like the Champions League final, and they aired it when they had the time. But then the crew came along, and we made yearly or, you know, a couple times a year trips up to Columbus to see the crew. I never got to see the crew play at the Horseshoe, which is one of those things that I'll always, I don't know if regret is the right word, but always be sorry about. But I did get to see, I saw some games that in 99 at, I saw two games in 99 at, during the first year crew stadium. And then, you know, going on from there, and I moved back to Columbus in 2001. And I was one of those couple of games a year kind of fans, knew about them, kept an eye on them. Soccer wasn't exactly high on my list of priorities in my early 20s, we'll put it that way. But yeah, I was a casual, if you will, until that fateful day in 2008. I don't know. I think you all know my story. Sam just moved to the bridge of the Starship Enterprise. That's cool. So my first crew game was 1999. My first crew game as a when it like that started the streak, if you will, was the season opener in 2008. And it was a funny story because a buddy of mine called me up on that Saturday and said, "Hey, I know a bar where people play foosball and then go watch soccer. You in?" And I said, "Yeah, sure, let's do that." And he picked me up at my apartment and we parked in front of Ruby Tuesdays, and the rest is history. That bar being Ruby Tuesdays of local infamy, and those people being the Hudson Street Hooligans, and that soccer being that game against Toronto that was the first game that the Nordec was in existence. And, you know, that was a historic match. If I could.
Yeah.
I will. It was a historic
match. As you should. What was it about that game or that season that really hooked you, given you had been, as you said, kind of more of a periodical fan before then?
I don't want to be super cheesy and say, it was a family. It was a group of, you know, dudes my age who got together and got rowdy, drank beer, watched soccer, had a good time. You know, it was the whole Hudson Street Hooligans 2008 experience that sucked me in. Plus, I made some good friends that day. My pals were all into it. Like, hey, let's do this again next week or next time this happens. And then they were like, we get together here on away games. And it just, you know, it snowballed. I didn't walk away going, oh my God, this has filled a gaping hole in my life that I've been yearning for decades. But that was a pretty sweet time. I want to do that again soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Patrick, feel free to jump in whenever you have something to add or ask.
So you were there for the birth and accidentally there for the birth in Nordeca.
Yeah, I was totally on accident. Yeah.
And then that translated into the Hudson Street Hooligans. Let's call it, it's not a family. We'll call it a collegium. How about that?
Yeah.
So what was your journey with the Hooligans? You know, that community that you kind of fell into.
You know, that's the first time anybody ever asked me how I got so deep into HSH so quickly. And I've pondered that on my deepest, darkest soul searching nights, you know, whatever. But it really, I have no freaking idea how that happened. I think it's because I had nothing better to do. And I showed up at the bar early and made friends with John, who was, you know, John Wendland. And, you know, just made friends with that group of guys that were there early and stayed late. And we clicked and hit it off. And before long, the event that cemented in my head that this is more than just a casual pastime for me was one day, I can't remember if we were going to an away game or if it was a home game or whatever, showed up the bar at like noon. And my friend and I walked in and we were like, hey, we, on the way here, we passed a foosball table on the curb. You want us to go get it? And he was like, yeah, go get it. And we're like, well, okay, hang on. I got to go switch cars out, get my truck. And John just threw me his truck keys and goes, take mine. It's fine. Okay, cool. I guess we're pals now. I'm driving. I mean, you know how it is. You loan somebody your car. It's kind of a bond.
Yeah.
But what got me from a random dude off the street who just showed up to play foosball and lucked into the berth of the Nordeca to being involved at the level that I was for the period that I was, I have no idea how that happened.
President.
Oh, no. So if HSH were a movie, I would be Tom and not Michael.
And what a movie that would be.
That would be such a movie, wouldn't it? Yeah, I never was the in charge. I was never the leader. I assisted with a lot of decisions. Well, you know, I influenced a lot of things that occurred, I'm not going to lie. But I was never the leader of the group. And I never wanted to be the leader of the group. I'm always better at being the guy behind the guy than the dude out in front. I'm good at being told what to do.
That's because you're so tall that when you're behind other people, you can still be seen.
Yeah, right.
they don't want you blocking them.
Right. How much do you think the fact that that year played out the way it did had an impact?
Very much. And I'm not a front runner. I'll never be a front runner. But had the crew made the playoffs and lost in the second round, lost at Kansas City, then, you know, I probably still would have a similar story to what I do now, but I would not have been so passionate. That championship, that run. And it wasn't really – okay, so let's be real here. The magic of 2008 was obviously we won the cup. That was spectacular. But it wasn't just winning the cup. It was the way that season unfolded. Everything that happened, the never say die, the next man up, all of the things that made that team special led to the cup. The cup was just the cherry on top. It was everything else about the season, both on the field and off the field. So I think that – had it been just a normal, mediocre Columbus Crew soccer season, I probably still would have been, okay, sweet, this is pretty cool, I'll do this more often. Not, oh my God, this is my new way of life. You know? Yeah.
I think that season is, in some form or another, similar type of story for a lot of people I've talked to, for people we've had on here. You know, not even people that were pretty diehard Crew fans before that season.
The season changed a lot of
– yeah.
Crew fan paths. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people went from casual 10 game packs to full blown family season ticket members. A lot of people like myself went from one or two games a year to 10 game packs. You know, that season changed a lot for a lot of people, and not just because of the cup, but because of the run up to the cup.
Right. Well, and that team too was just kind of relatable. I mean, they were just guys.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Right?
And
I, you know, had I not run one day, I forget the circumstances, which I hate to say that I forget a lot of the circumstances that lead up to the things that I remember. I don't know why we were at Clada, but we were at Clada, and I was at Kroger before, after, during my experience at Clada. If anybody you ever know what, if you, you know what I mean by we were at Clada, you know what I mean by I was at Kroger. I was at Kroger. Don't know what I was doing there. Anyway, I turned a corner and here comes Steven Leonard on a skateboard. And I ran into him and he ran, obviously we ran into each other and he apologized to me. I was like, whoa. And he's like, no, no, sorry, man. Sorry. And I'm like, it just, that, yeah. That team was special for a lot of different reasons. I'll never forget the look in Steven's eyes when he apologized to me. It was weird. And then there was the time I got confused with Chad Marshall out on the little mini pitch after a game. That was fun. Yeah, that was just – that year was perfect.
I gotta say how you and I met, because that story will always stick out in my head because it was the most random of situations ever.
It's a theme for me.
Do you remember?
No, I remember it was at – was it that game? Was it that Toronto game or was it the next game?
Neither. It was at the Come to Jesus meeting that Ziggy called for with the supporters groups.
Oh, yeah. I still remember. I remember that meeting now.
Yeah, and I so we're all standing outside, and by that time I had been a few games into, like, taking pictures from the stands and stuff like that. We're all standing outside gate 5 waiting to be let into this meeting with Ziggy that Ziggy called for with the supporters group leaders and just like members of the supporters groups. And I'm just like, I'm still trying to figure this whole like supporters group soccer people thingy out.
Oh yeah.
And I'm standing there. I don't remember who I was talking to, but all of a sudden I hear somebody talking to somebody else and going, so have you like seen the pictures by this Studio 79 guy? Does anybody know who he is? So I turn around and I'm like, hi. And that's how I got to meet Chris Lamacchia and a bunch of other dudes that day. But that one just always stood out to me as pretty funny.
That, you know, that
looking back on it now after 12 years.
God, has it been, oh man.
Well, 2008.
Yeah. No. Math is hard. Yeah.
And I'm sure you don't remember the time you introduced yourself to me. It was at the awards night, and I think you'd had a few, you were very, you're like, I'm a big fan. I read all your stuff. I'm a big fan.
Was that a poker night?
That was a poker night.
I was going to say, yeah. Awards night and had a few kind of go hand in hand.
But yeah.
Especially Chris back then.
You walked up, it's like, you're Patrick, aren't you? I'm a big fan. I'm like, I think you might have been the first person that actually recognized me as a writer. just randomly, so it sticks out in my mind too.
Well, you know, I'm glad I've got that impact on people's lives.
That's funny. Well, while we're on the topic, you obviously eventually got involved with Massive Report. How did that come to be? What made you interested in doing that side of crew stuff? You know, what's kind of your story with Massive Report?
So I will spare the gory details because, oh boy, they were gory. I was writing for a different website at the time. And I started writing for that website because the person who had been writing for that website was not a very good writer. So I emailed the editor and was like, I can do better. Let me do better. And I did. And so I wrote for that other website, which isn't even around anymore. For I think the majority of 2009 season. And then in early 2010, got a phone call from, Sam, was it you or was it Patrick that called me and said, hey, I don't know.
It was one of us.
It may even have been Bob back in the day. But
at that point it would have been Bob. I think Bob's last hurrah there.
Yeah, got a phone call that said, hey, we're starting a podcast. You want to come join us? And I was like, yeah, sure. So a couple days later, we had a meeting at Clada or our living room. And then, it went from there. I had some experience with writing way back when I was, you know, a kid. And what do you want to do when you grow up? I wanted to be a writer. Ooh, I wanted some sort of journalist. So, you know, writing and I have always kind of gone together. And then obviously I've got a real face for radio. So when they started a podcast, I was, that guy's ugly. He's got a deep voice. Let's get him involved. And here I am.
It worked out.
Yeah. What are, if you have some memories that stand out of the podcast and your time with a variety of people that were on it, I believe, while you were there?
Yeah. So I have two main memories that stand out. The first is there is one rule for a press box. One overarching cardinal rule for the press box. And that is if you are in the press box, you do not cheer at all. Don't show any emotion unless someone spills something in your lap. Then you can get angry. That's the only allowable emotion in a press box. Then we went to New York. Sam, was that? It was actually the three of us went to New York.
Yeah, we actually talked about it in the last podcast.
It was June 2011.
Yep. Yes, thank you.
The infamous Rich Mulchin game.
And yeah, the infamous Rich Balshin game. Rich Balshin scored that goal in stoppage or at the death or whatever it was. I don't remember because I immediately stood up and screamed like a little 12-year-old girl fan. And everybody looked at me and I went and immediately sat down and tried to just disappear into thin air.
It was an open air box. I mean,
yeah. So in a lot of people picture a press box as like up between the second and third decks, you know, covered in glass and blah, blah, blah. No. In Red Bull Arena, the press box is at field level in open air. It's just seats with tables in front of it next to section 103. It's really, really cool and very nice. And one of my favorite press boxes, but it's visible to everyone. And I was sitting next to a couple of guys from just this little publication called Sports Illustrated. And there was some dude from a TV station behind me and I have never been so embarrassed in my entire life. But it was great. It was absolutely worth it. And I don't care. I hope that all of those guys go around telling a story. You remember that time, that dude? And I really hope that I had that much impact on their lives. It was a blast.
Like the time, it's like the time that I covered USA Jamaica and I was all the way by the Jamaican, the in full regalia and full cheering. It was the reverse Chris Lamacchia moment. I still remember it. Just so you know, they might be thinking of me like, remember that guy?
Right. And you guys talked about it last week, so at least I had an impact on you. And then, you know, the other big memory that stands out for me is the night that we did the podcast ahead of the most recent, well, US and Mexico in 2015. When did we do that one? 2013? 2012.
The one that we did at Land Grant?
No, the one we did at Hendox. Crap, I can't even remember.
It was 2013 then. Because there's 2009 predates the show, yes. 2013, and then 2016 was at Land Grant.
And that one was spectacular because
the one we got filmed in, wasn't it?
It was the one we got filmed in. We had just a whirlwind of like a cavalcade of Columbus Crew celebrity guests. It was spectacular. Columbus Crew, U.S. national soccer team, that was just something that was really special to be a part of. One of those things that I'll always kind of treasure is like, yeah, I was there for that. I was a part of that.
Who came through for that, for people who are unaware?
This is going to sound silly. Y'all are going to laugh. Ashley Ignelzi will always have a soft spot in my heart, but because she is such a consummate professional at the same time, so enthusiastic about everything that she's doing.
That's true.
I struggle to remember the specifics of the event. I remember how great Ashley was. I remember how, the one thing that I remember, I know it's not a guest, but every time that we would bring someone up or ask a question or anybody who was of any renown, like walked into the room, the crowd just lit up. The room was electric and it was palpable that evening. Whether we were talking to I don't want to drop names because my memory of these specifics are a bit fuzzy because we were at a bar, but I just remember how there were a few times I looked around and went, this is so cool. This is so great.
It's really funny. The last USA Mexico game, we actually had like a bunch of like big name celebrities that came in, and you know, everybody from Grant Wall to Simon, shoot, now I'm forgetting his last
name. Yeah, Simon Borg
and Ariel Castillo and all those.
Wasn't Dunny there for that one too?
Dunny was there. Yeah, I mean, it was all of the soccer, American soccer celebrities.
Which are, you know, if we're going to be honest about it, they're all C-list at best celebrities. Like, these guys couldn't get a table at a New York restaurant on a Friday night.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, in the soccer circle,
to us,
they're the well-known names. Yeah.
You know, Simon Borg walks in and we all go, that's Simon Borg. You know, like, he's just a short, bald dude with bad opinions, but he's Simon Borg.
I got scarfed by Simon Borg right after his interview.
Awesome.
His referee one is always still the gold standard. I appreciated his spot on MLSsoccer.com.
Oh, you know what? I take that back. They were for the MLS Cup, not for USA Mexico.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes, because I remember that as well. I was at the MLS Cup podcast as just like a bystander. I wasn't. I mean, I was a part of it, but I wasn't a part of it because by then I'd kind of had a few changes in life and stepped away. That 2015 MLS Cup was also pretty spectacular.
Do tell.
I mean, do I have to? Other than the last 90 minutes of that season was pretty dang special.
Well, give us your version of that, because everyone experiences it different.
Yeah, so that was, as I lean back in my chair and I can hear my grandmother yelling at me. that was one of the first years that I had resigned my post as a member of the hooligan leadership team. And just, you know, I wasn't working for Massive Report anymore, and I was a fan that year. Wife and I had just gotten married the year before. And was just able to actually be a fan again. Like, I wasn't under any pressure. It felt good to not have to be there. I think that I skipped a few games that year, which is unheard of in our circle. And skipped them for no other reason than there was something else to do that day. But, you know, always keeping an eye on what was going on. So it was nice to enjoy that season at a relaxed pace for me. I know that makes sense to the three of you. But, yeah. That's what will stick out in my head. And then obviously everybody else is pissed about losing MLS Cup. And I'm the guy that's like, hey man, I'm just happy to be here.
You touched on the supporters culture and stuff earlier, and we kind of got off topic, but I wanted to get your perspective as someone who has not only been a part of that, but has seen kind of the other side of things on the media side and whatnot. Just the supporters culture, what's been built in Columbus, because as you mentioned, that 2008 season, the Nordic comes together. It wasn't always harmonious at the beginning and even down the road, but you know, it's turned into something that, you know, was originally multiple supporters groups in different parts of the stadium. And now when you say Nordic around people from the MLS, they recognize what that is. So from your experience, just kind of the building of that and how, you know, it really became a unified thing, and not something that the front office just pushed together, but people actually working together and whatnot.
So, yeah, that's it really was very organic. You know, you hear about all these supporters groups that are that have popped up over the past 10 or 12 years around the league, and about how, you know, they were propped up by their front offices, or about, you know, all of that stuff. And I said that not to speak ill of them and what they're doing in their cities. I said that because we here in Columbus had a completely different experience. Whether anybody wants to admit it or not, I'll be the guy that says the first handful of games in 2008, those supporters groups did not get along at all. We really did. There came a point where it was like, if this is going to work, we have to work together. Whether we like each other or not doesn't matter. For the greater good of what we're trying to accomplish here, we have to do what we have to do. And it was a grassroots effort of guys that normally would not be seen in the same room, let alone the same bar, getting together and working towards the same goal, all for the love of the team, the sport, the city, whatever, however you want to put it. And so it really was, it was grassroots, it was organic, it was all of those crazy catchphrases that everybody was throwing away, and that laid the foundation for all of the great things that came. You know, we got all the notoriety for being the bad boys of MLS that year because we threw streamers and we smoke bombs and F-bombs and, you know, all the other stuff that we did 2008, 2009, 2010 as the bad boys of MLS. I would contend, if I were still traveling in that circle of people, that had we not done all that, there wouldn't be a whole lot of groups that weren't trying. Like, where would – I'm not saying that we gave birth to the Sons of Ben, but I'm saying the Sons of Ben maybe not wouldn't have come out as hard as they did with their ultra, you know, whatever. I don't want to overstate the importance because we were a building block, and we are a building block in the history of the league. But I think that the importance of those early Nordeca years can't be understated because of the boundaries that we pushed and the rules that we broke and the traditions that we started. You know, if not for us, streamers, we'd all still be throwing streamers. Those were the good old days. Now I wouldn't be caught dead with smoke bomb.
Yeah, it's certainly changed. And I think to kind of transition from that group becoming something into Save the Crew. And, you know, obviously that was a negative topic for a long time, but the fact that it worked, I think, puts a different spin on it. And it was a lot of people who were involved in the supporters group and a lot of people that weren't that still got involved, but there was still that sense of community that you've kind of touched on a handful of times now that I think really helped make that happen.
So Save the Crew did something that I don't think has happened. And I've only been to 17 MLS stadia, so I can't speak for everybody, but I don't know of another community of fans where the people in, and I'm going to use some colloquialisms here, so forgive me, where the folks in the good seats united so much, so quickly, and so hard with the folks in the cheap seats. You know, Save the Crew really did bring together the preferred East crowd with the Nordeca, and it turned the whole state, united the whole stadium towards one goal. It bridged a lot of gaps. It, you know, however you want to say it, Phil, it tore down barriers. How's that? So yeah, it was a negative topic. And it was a poor circumstance for that to happen, but it was another sea change moment in the history of the Columbus Crew fan culture to where now there's this movement to make the whole stadium a Nordeca, which has been a popular phrase for years and years. But now I know people that sit other places around the stadium and I can have an influence on how they do their things and they can have an influence on how we do. And it actually is going to happen. It's not just we want to get everybody together with a thunderclap. No. Well, the thing, don't get me started on that. It was great. There's a lot of good that will come out of four generations, the Save the Crew thing. And so, yeah, it started under bad pretense, but it finished on, well, as we know, the highest of high notes.
Speaking of, where were you when you learned, I assume it was from Grant Rawls' tweet, but where were you when you found out about what was happening?
Where was I on October 17, 2017?
There you go.
About 11:30 p.m. Because I'm an old man, I was watching the evening news. And I got a whole barrage of text messages and tweet mentions and Facebook. And I don't remember who was first, but I obviously started looking at my phone and just time stopped. Time stopped. Oh my God. And I went and got my wife, and she was in bed reading a book or something. She's a nerd like that. She reads. Went and got her and told her. And Sam, I think it was you and me and Smitty. Patrick, were you there?
I was there.
Yeah. Kind of got out, we all got on the phone together and just, you know.
Well, not at the phone. I was at Hen Ducks the following night.
Yes, that's what it was. It was Sam and Smitty and I got on, was it a phone or a group chat?
I think it was a group chat.
Yeah, group chat. And then talked about going to Hen Ducks the next night. And yeah, it was those 72 hours were just surreal. Kind of a blur, but I remember exactly where I was on October 17th. About 11:30.
Yeah, you bringing up Hen Ducks when we had Smitty, T-Bone, Jonathan, whichever name you want to use for him on last week. He talked about how he went to that event expecting it to be kind of a morning situation. And
like
he
talked
about, yeah, exactly. And just Morgan's persistence of like, we're not going to let this happen. And just like his positive attitude. And I remember that too.
Morgan will always be the most annoying guy in the room. And this time it worked out for him. By the way, Morgan, I hope everything with your upcoming, your impending fatherhood works out well.
Yeah. Yeah, we all do. And his tweets have been rather entertaining over the last few days.
Rather.
Yes. So throughout that movement, you know, obviously there were ups and downs. And I think there were times when people really thought something was happening, you know, Ohio revised code, whatever the number is, those type of things.
Today, funny you should mention that. My time hop today was about when the PSV and their lawyers released their 25-page motion to dismiss. I sat down and read all 25 pages of that motion to dismiss. Have I ever read a legal document before that? No. Have I ever read a legal document since then? No. Did I read all 25 of those pages? Yes. Did I have Google at the ready for the legal terms? Absolutely. Do I remember anything about it other than thinking this is stupid? No. But that's how that, and I kind of know where you were going with that. And yeah, that's how ludicrous that whole thing was with the ups and the downs. We're winning and we're losing. Winning and we're losing. They motion to dismiss. It's going to get thrown out. I read it, but I'm not a lawyer. You know, it's, yeah. And then everybody posts on Facebook, what do you think of this? Tag your lawyer friends.
Do you have a moment that stands out when you were kind of like, okay, this really has a chance, or, you know, that I believe this is going to happen, as opposed to kind of those ups and downs?
I'm not really one to ever count chickens, if you will. So I didn't believe it was happening until I got a text from Morgan that said, hey, be at Land Grant tomorrow at 2 p.m. And then tomorrow at 2 p.m. was, or noon or whenever it was the stadium unveiling with J.W. Johnson. But there were a lot of things that I remember occurring that were, this is looking good for us. This is going in our favor. When Mike DeWine got involved, when Zach Klein got involved, all the troubles that Mr. Precourt had with the Austin City Council, and then all the troubles that Mr. Precourt's proxies had with the Austin City Council, they, dare I say, blundered quite a bit. I think that as through my eyes, as I watched it all unfold, it was more, things looked up more than they looked down.
That makes sense. I think.
But I was never 100% confident until it was over.
Yeah. And I think anyone would be silly to, right? I mean, you know, like you said, there was legalese and all sorts of stuff that was happening that the average person, even the people involved weren't, you know, I mean, they were confident in their work, but to say for sure, you know, hey, this is going to happen. No one was doing that because they didn't want to be the one saying that and be wrong, especially from, you know, a DeWine perspective or people that really matter.
Or even just city or state staff. Like, turns out I know people that are on staff at the city attorney's office that have like insider knowledge that kept their mouth shut. God bless them. I could never do that. I like to tell secrets.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to that stuff.
You do like to speak your mind. I, on that, I have a question. So,
okay.
In our hypothetical, we're having a dinner party. You and your wife, lovely wife, are having a dinner party. You're having two people over. What do you serve at your dinner party with Duncan Outen and Chad Marshall?
Oh, Sam, I'm sorry for the clap. Serve the dinner party with Duncan and Chad.
This is not Aces Radio. I'm not worried about your clapping.
No, I'm just worried about overmodulating the microphone so it still sounds halfway decent because it's not Aces Radio.
Right.
you know, that's a really good question. I would serve traditional American fare, probably burger. You know, we would do a cookout, burgers and brats. I'm not sure that I would invite them into my home, but they can hang out on the patio. Five, 7 years ago, we could have gone on with that for a little, but now we're all adults. We're all grown up. I have to be honest. Duncan is working on a project with one of my best friends. Chad has retired and is living his literal best life out. And I think that he's in Indiana now.
He is in Indiana.
Yeah. So I got nothing but love for those guys. Chad will always have me to thank for his need to sign up for Twitter, which I'm sure that he is thankful for every day. And I wish Duncan nothing but success in all of his professional endeavors and also with the family. He's got a gorgeous wife and a baby daughter that's just absolutely spectacular. So now sitting here, you know, I'd serve normal food. But back then, I probably would have been Googling some prank recipes or something like that. And that is, of course, assuming they accepted my invitation to dinner, which they most likely would not have.
I was going to say, in your time with Massive Report, you've managed to, how you say, stir up some controversy?
I've pissed off a few people.
Yes.
I did it like 3 days ago. So,
well, I mean, from a Massive Report setting, since we were talking on the podcast, but like the one that will always stand out to me.
This segment going to turn into what's the favorite time? Your favorite time LaMachia said something controversial?
Sure. Actually, that's exactly what I was going for.
Cool.
But yeah, let's say it was a Saturday night game against Kansas City.
Oh yeah.
And
there was an afternoon game because it was.
Was it an afternoon? Oh, it was an afternoon game. You're right.
The sun was shining.
Yes, and it was. Was it 09?
No, it was.
It wasn't 08. It was either 09 or 2010.
Then maybe we're thinking of different Kansas City events.
Okay. Well, this wasn't a playoff game, and it was right before the end of the season. Like the Crew were ready in the playoffs, right before the end of the season, and you came up with a very, very fiery piece. After a game the team should have easily won.
Yeah, no, that was 2010.
Yeah. To which I had to talk one Duncan Outen off a cliff of wanting to murder you.
Mm-hmm.
You care to venture on how that conversation went at the poker night?
I don't remember.
It was either in the next to last home game or the last home game. And we were, you and Duncan and everybody else, we were at the awards night. Mm-hmm. I had to literally walk you over to Duncan so that you could talk this out because I was tired of being in between.
No, so I don't remember the conversation with Duncan, and that's probably a testament to how far we're not friends. I mean, it's not like I call him up every Friday and we, you know, hang out. But how far Duncan and I have come since those days. The conversation I do remember that night was with Chad Marshall when he grabbed me by the shoulder and pulled me aside and said, "Hey, you need to knock it off." so yeah, that was, I mean, we all have this perception of Chad Marshall as kind of the quiet, you know, his playing perception. He's a very, very strong leader on the field and somewhat reserved, but also can be fiery when needed. I saw the fiery side that night, and it's an effective leadership tool. We'll put it that way.
Real quick, Chris, for those who are unfamiliar with your history, what caused these confrontations?
You know, I've never actually said these words before, so here you go. Are you ready? I created and was the Not Chad Marshall Twitter account for, what, 2 years, guys? Ish? Something like that? And because of that, anytime anybody came up with a parody Twitter account after that, I got blamed for it. Like, Lamont, did you do it again? No, I didn't. No. And that went well for a while until all of a sudden it wasn't going well anymore. At which point it just kind of lost its luster. So yeah, I've said it one time. It's recorded. Right. I'm never going to say it again.
So, another question. It, you can use a phrase. I won't say in one word, but maybe keep it to one word. What would you call the smell of the Ruby's basement?
Acrid.
Appropriate.
Acrid.
Yeah, this is not a video podcast because the look on your face was pretty good.
The smell of the Ruby's basement, it's unmistakable. It's one of a kind. It is unique. Never to be repeated. Often imitated. Memorable.
All true. I've lived it all true. Not as much as you. And that segues into my next question. The worst thing to happen on a Nor on Tour bus that you were on.
So
and there's a lot of avenues you can take on this question. It's open.
There are. And there are a lot of definitions of worse that I could use, that I could work with here. But I gotta be honest, so there's all the normal drunken debauchery that occurs when you get a bunch of 20 somethings and a few older and a few younger folks together on a bus for 4 to 8 hours. But I most of the time made an active effort to avoid that. I usually sat in the middle of the bus. I honest to God, don't have any good Nor on Tour stories that I would share without the express written permission of at least one other person. You know what I mean?
Is that other person a lawyer?
Oh, okay. Two other people. One, my lawyer, and the other, someone else who was there. A witness, we'll put it. Nor on Tour in and of itself, from the moment that you put your seat in a seat to the moment that you stand up and get back in your car, Nor on Tour is unforgettable. And I don't have one other than the mad dash to Philly year. I don't have one story of the transportation phase that sticks out in my head.
The mad dash to Philly. Is that the one where we recorded a podcast under the bridge?
No, the mad dash to Philly was the year we got hit by the bus and, Rachel
with the duck
got hit by the goose.
Yes. And Rachel that and came me, up in my memories the other day.
Yeah. We decided that, you know, bus gets hit by a goose, windshield shatters, obviously trip is done. Handful of us spend the hour back to Crew Stadium debating if we get in our cars and go, can we make it by kickoff? Four of us decided, well, four adults, two drivers decided, yeah, we can do it. So got in our cars and tore off out 70 East heading for Philly, Cannonball Run style. And Robbie Brickner, for those of you that know him, and myself driving, because it was 2012, driving and tweeting at the same time, because that was not frowned upon back then. We live tweeted it. And I don't know why we stuck together on the freeway, but we stuck together on the freeway for some. And I still to this day, we don't know why we did that. But like I would text him, hey, we got to stop real quick. We'll catch up with you. And yeah, it was great. Pulled into Chester, the stadium at Chester, whatever it's called now, Talon Energy or whatever. Pulled up to it as the anthem was playing. I talked us into, like, convinced the parking lot attendant that we were had a VIP pass. So I talked us into the VIP lot right outside the player's entrance. Got out in time to shotgun a couple of beers and go in the stadium. Made lifelong friends with some of the Philly fans. And that's a weekend I'll never forget. Yeah. Good times. That's the mad dash to Philly.
Patrick, you got anything else?
So the mad dash to Philly, but you said you've been to 17 stadiums.
17 is a gross exaggeration. I think it's actually 12.
Of those, Red Sporting Bull Arena. Kansas City or Red Bull Arena?
Red Bull Arena. Red Bull Arena, and I will tell this to anybody that listens, Red Bull Arena is the only Major League Soccer match that I've been to that felt Major League, that had that Major League emotion on par with a Major League Baseball game or an NFL match or a hockey game. And that's not a knock on anybody else. That's just, it is what it is. I hope that we can recreate that here when we open our new building next year. Knock on wood. After Red Bull Arena, Atlanta was pretty cool. Atlanta is too big. Mercedes-Benz is too big for a Major League Soccer game. It's great. They're doing great things there. They're, you know, all the talk about what's the name of their supporters group? The Ninth Rail, the River's End. I don't know. None of that matters. What matters is the fact you can get a hot dog and a beer for $8 total. The concession stands are all open. The bathrooms are clean. It's a cashless environment. That stadium, Arthur Blank is doing, Uncle Arthur is doing good things there.
Sam, what you got for Chris?
I got nothing. Right. I mean, we've done many a road trips together. DC stands out.
Yeah. DC was a lot of fun.
Philly stands out a couple of times at least.
Mm-hmm. The time that we went to New York, that the Rich Balchin game, we went to New York and we went
to Manhattan.
We missed the last train coming out of the city, and Patrick jumped a subway turnstile.
That's right. I hopped a turnstile.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we got back to the hotel at like 3 a.m. and had to walk something like 6 blocks because that was the closest train station.
No, it wasn't. I'm pretty sure it was like 60 blocks.
I don't know. Whatever it was long and tiring. And
at 3 a.m.
A long, long night. That was probably one of the most fun road trips, though. Mm-hmm. Hopping on the train, going to Manhattan, just hanging around in Times Square. That was the one Nor on tour that we actually got a group pic.
A group photo.
Yeah. And that was a lot of fun.
All right. Well, I'll get you out of here on a couple quick hitting questions.
Ooh,
Yeah, basically. Favorite crew player of all time.
Of all time?
Yep.
Frankie. If just one, it's Frankie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Where did you watch the 2008 MLS Cup final?
Studio 35, actually. Yeah. I, at that point, didn't have the financial means to make the trip. To wisely make the trip. Yeah. I know a lot of people who got themselves airfare and then figured out hotel when they got there. I didn't want to risk that in LA. I think had it been in East Coast City, I would have done it. So I stayed behind and watched it at Studio 35, which was in and of itself a pretty memorable experience.
And then the final one, the most memorable, like when you think crew game, is there one that stands out just and not like the MLS Cup final, but like something that somebody wouldn't normally pick?
So obviously I'm going to say the 2008 Eastern Conference final.
Okay.
That is, you know, oh my God, we broke the bleachers. I'm pretty sure had there been a Richter scale there, we would have registered on the Richter scale. Yeah, that was nuts. But then just another, like another random crew game that somebody wouldn't say.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You could go to a Tuesday night home match against Sporting Kansas City or Montreal and have the absolute time of your life. If you want to, it's all about what you make of it. So my answer is any crew game.
I like it. All right, Chris. Well, thank you very much for coming on, reliving your podcast glory days.
thanks for having me. Oh, I was thinking earlier, you guys will appreciate this. This is the first time I've ever been on a podcast without wearing a hat.
Ooh.
Ooh,
interesting.
I didn't even think about that.
I know, right? Weird.
Yeah.
Is that because you're at home?
No, it's because I didn't know how it would play with the webcam and the lighting, and
that's why we're only using audio out of this.
All right. Do one of those Zoom backgrounds that puts a hat on you.
Yeah. Right.
I just found that there's a Tiger King one.
There is.
You never know.
Yep.
I will. I'll have to look into that for my next work meeting.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for listening. As we've said at the end of all these, we hope to not have to do too many of them because we hope to be talking about actual, you know, MLS soccer and the crew and whatnot. But for now, we hope this just brings, you know, an hour or so of, you know, fun and something to look forward to. And we try to have some fun with it. And I think so far all of our guests have been good. Chris was no exception. You know, these good stories and whatnot. So we'll continue to do that. We've got some more people in mind that we're going to reach out to. So stay tuned. We'll have more. But until then, stay safe. Stay home unless you have to go out. And hopefully we'll all be together soon. Mafre Stadium, a bar, you know, one of those places. Enjoying
Chinese restaurant.
Yes. Yeah. Anything right now. So thanks, guys. We appreciate it.